You are Locked On AFL, your daily AFL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On AFL. I'm your host, Kane Pittman.
Particularly with a pathetic effort from Pitt. I mean, it was the most disgraceful display I've ever seen from a big film. That's pretty hard on an individual, but he's going to have to live with that.
And alongside me, as he is each and every day, is Josh Lloyd.
Lloyd is Lloyd. Lloyd to Lloyd. 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 Lloyd.
Hello, Kane. Hello, everybody. We are ready to podcast about the AFL, and we're going to be podcasting and previewing and recapping games every day of the week, it seems.
Exactly. I'm looking forward to it. I mentioned this on a tweet last night, which, by the way, you're not allowed to tweet, and that's what you get.
I am in jail.
If you want to be those people that gets the blue check mark, then this is what happens. This is what you deserve. You get what you deserve. So you're locked out, according to Twitter, due to some sort of hacking situation going on. But hey, listen, I'm sure you'll be back on board shortly. But as far as lockdown goes, we know Metro Melbourne, they're in lockdown. If you're a footy fan, I don't think you could ask for much more. The AFL plans to get through round 7, then get through round 8, which we know the fixture for those rounds has already dropped. And then they're looking at 33 games in 19 days, games of footy every single day of the week. For me, even though I'm not in the full lockdown, I'm not doing a lot. I'm mostly staying home. I work from home anyway. Seems like a pretty sweet deal to me.
Yeah, it is. Now, there's obviously stresses, you know, with the players and families and that sort of stuff. But in terms of footy every day, and I heard there might be even multiple games on midweek nights, which would be pretty exciting for us to see. We've talked about it a lot. We love the Thursday night footy. I think that's here to stay, regardless of what's happening in future seasons. I think that's here to stay. Monday night has never been a success, and I don't think we're ever going to get Tuesday and Wednesday going, but I think Thursday is absolutely the biggest winner of this scheduling change for this season.
So I think for the most part, coaches that I've spoke to or been involved in press conferences, other interviews you've seen on TV, radio, wherever it may be, it seems to me that while these players are in these hubs, they seem genuinely open to the idea of playing games every 4 or 5 days. They're like, listen, we're up here. There's no other distractions. It's about football. We're playing football. If we want to play every 4 or 5 days, then we're certainly open to that. Mark McGowan over at afl.com.au, also Morky Bucks fan. I found that out yesterday, so shout out to him. But he just dropped a story a few minutes ago. Paul Marsh, who is the AFL Players Association boss, spoke to the AFL, and he's expressed some concern that the AFL have this contract freeze going on right now where new contracts can't be signed right at this minute. And he said, if that is going to be the case moving forward, then it's unacceptable risk for the players to say, yeah, we're going to be playing these 33 games in 19 days. Certainly from a health perspective, from an injury perspective, there's some concerns there. And we spoke about that last week already. This season, it feels like we're starting to see the effects of soft tissue come into the game. We spoke about syndesmosis and other issues like that. There's a lot of injuries. And if you're playing these games every 4 or 5 days, no doubt that's going to be a concern, particularly if you're a player that's out of contract at the end of the season. If you can't sign a deal or you can't have those negotiations and you go down with a season-ending injury, I totally understand why that would be of concern to the players.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a problem because people would want to they'd be looking to... We hear contracts getting signed and extended during the year all the time, and that's exactly what players would be doing, even more so in a more uncertain economic environment. And then to put that extra stress on your body without having that ability to say, well, I'll do it if I can lock in for 2 more years, and I'm okay with that. And I understand that is what the AFLPA and their president is designed to do, is to stand up for what the players want and their best interest, which everyone's best interest is for the games to go on, for the season to get done in a healthy and safe way. And that's what both sides want. But there is that risk of future earnings, future careers, injuries that the players and the Players Association do need to make a key point of. And I think what Paul Marsh has come out and said, and players have obviously voiced that towards him as well, that is something that they're going to have to discuss. I don't think it's going to necessarily you know, stop this season or stop this compaction of games. But the AFL has to look at something in terms of the unfreezing the contract freeze, or there has to be something that changes it, because that contract freeze was put in March, and we talked about this before we went on air, about the uncertainty of, you know, where the salary cap lies, what the revenue is going to be, how players are going to be paid in for the next season and the next 2 years and 3 years. We don't know how that's going to fly with the lack of revenue this season, and who knows what's going to happen in the future years. So there is obviously some negotiating to get done. I think it'll get sorted. I don't know how, but I think it'll get sorted.
Yeah, we also have to look at this from the other side of things. So there's no doubt this is just an opportune time for the Players Association to have a bargaining chip, right? I mean, because let's think about this. They've been playing all these games anyway. They've already accepted the decrease in salary, so it works out that these guys are getting around 72% of their normal salary this season, which is a bigger hit for some players. It's also more necessary for a lot of players in the league, the younger players in particular, to get their full salary. So there's been sacrifices made there. But this is a bargaining chip because the Players Association can say, oh, well, this is, we knew what we were coming into here. We understood there was going to be hubs. But now you said to the Victorian teams, it's going to be no more than 35 days. Now you're talking the rest of the season. Okay, now we can get something back. So this is what they're doing. So again, like you said, do I think this is going to be the end of the season? No way. Of course I don't. But the Players Association would be silly not to try and get something back in the process. And that's what they're going to try and do here. I think as far as contract negotiations go, we were discussing this just briefly before we started recording. It's difficult. It's really difficult to project salary caps, conditions, the financial state of the game moving forward, because the AFL, like many other sports around the world, and the AFL perhaps even more so, they're not in a financial position that some of the major sports leagues around the league are. They're going to take a massive loss this year. There's no way around that. The revenue from the fans is not there, even though in some of these states they're going to start to get some crowds back in. So as what that means for salary caps, what that means for what the clubs can spend within their own four walls, I'm not sure, but it's going to be a big hit. So I think also from the AFL's point of view, it's really difficult to say, yep, go ahead, start these negotiations, do all this stuff, do this, do that, sign new contracts. They don't know where the game's going to be financially, and it's going to be really hard to tell what that spot is going to be until you get through a grand final, which, fingers crossed, we get there.
Yeah, let's hope that it all works out. I've said this a million times that stuff changes every day, pretty much. So we'll see how this all plays out, and we'll keep everyone updated. The other news to look at it is Nat Fyfe, who we talked about how weird it was he was coming back that quickly from a hamstring. So we talked about that. Then we talked about how he didn't look right in the win against St Kilda and played the entire second half in the forward line. And then the talk came out that he wasn't quite right during the week, and now he thinks he's going to play again this week. What's going on with this guy? Like, I know that it's a big game and it's the derby up against the Eagles, but he clearly wasn't right. He came out and said as much afterwards that he was giving him some trouble. So why are we pushing him again?
But I think because Freo have won two games in a row, and it is the derby, as you said.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it. That's what it is. And they're only 4 points behind the Eagles. So Fremantle they're starting to feel themselves a little bit. They're starting to think that they can get back into this season with that five plays this week. Extremely limited last week. We spoke about that a couple of days ago. Spent basically the second half in the goal square, despite the fact that Freo were two down on the bench. So he wasn't okay. And you're talking about a guy that's Brownlow medalist. You don't want to be messing around with this guy. You would certainly prefer to say, listen, you sit out this week and we'll have you for the rest of the year, than try and force him through another game when he's clearly not right and miss him for maybe four or five. So it's a huge risk. But Freo now coming home, first time they get to play in front of fans as well. I think that's probably a factor. Apparently, they're still having 30,000 fans in there. That looks like that's a thing that's going to happen. So there's plenty of factors why it would be tempting to play him. But if Fremantle think that they're a chance to really, you know, ruffle some feathers here and maybe sneak into the top eight, I think you really, really got to be careful.
I enjoyed the use of ruffling feathers when they're taking on the Eagles this week, Kane. That is elite pun.
Intentional, obviously.
Elite pun mastery there from you. So the Fyfe one, I was keen to watch it last week. I'm going to be extra keen to see if he actually plays this week and how he looks, because obviously he is a star of the game and a key factor for the Fremantle Dockers. Now we've got footy on tonight, which is awesome. It is your blokes, the Geelong team, up against Collingwood. All right, so where are we at? We know that Geelong had those two guys get injured last week against Brisbane. Duncan and Narkle are out. Jack Stephen and Clark are back in. While for Collingwood, Scharenberg and Kelly are out. And Josh Dacos returns along with Jordan Dugowie. Now, we've got our notes here and you've written, surely Mason Cox isn't playing. Because it is going to be another one of those wet, slippery type nights. He has struggled all season. What do you think, they're going to pull a late shifty move there?
Yeah, there's no way Mason Cox is playing. And I just could not understand any circumstance that he would play. I've got my weather up here right now. I'm looking at Perth. So these players, we've spoke about it. They've escaped to sunny Perth. They're like, oh, I'm jealous. We're here in Victoria. The weather's crap. We're in lockdown.
The weather is horrendous.
30,000. Yeah, 30,000 fans in a stadium over there in Perth. So right now, it's just started raining. That's what my weather app is telling me. And it's telling me that it's not going to stop raining. Well, I don't know. For the next 24 hours, it's rain. So this is going to be wet. And this isn't going to be just a little bit slippery underfoot. They're going to be playing in a swimming pool if this eventuates. So Mason Cox, I mean, we spoke about him. The only thing that he's bringing to the table right now is his ability to potentially grab a contested mark. He doesn't do anything when the ball's on the ground. So I don't think there's any way that Cox plays. It would be really surprising to me if he was the one that came in. They had Noble is an emergency for this one, and I did have the teams up, but I lost that for a second.
Yeah, Cameron Thomas, Noble, and Magin.
Josh Thomas. Yeah. Josh Thomas is the other one. So I'd expect either Josh Thomas or John Noble is going to play in this game. To me, it just doesn't make sense for the Pies. I know that means that Brody Grundy, you're going in, and you're going to be the guy all night long, but so be it. I just don't think this is going to be a game that makes any sense to play Mason Cox.
Well, Cox hasn't really played a huge amount as a ruckman anyway this season. Like, there was a game, I think that game where he had the one disposal, I don't think he had a single hit out in that game either. And that doesn't mean he didn't play in the ruck, but it means he didn't play in the ruck very much. So I think that we can they can get around that if they need to change, swing Ruffhead into the ruck. He used to be a ruckman. There's other options that you can put in there. Like, hey, concede the hitouts, win the clearances. That's I'm all about that. All about that as a tactic. Now, Mitch Duncan is out for Geelong. So who steps in? It won't be Jack Stephen moving in there. He doesn't look like he's going to be able to fulfill that role. Is it just more like we saw last week, Menengola, who was really, really good against Brisbane? Is it him that steps up to replace Duncan?
Yeah, I think so. And Menegola named on a wing. And Duncan's a guy over the last couple of years that has sort of moved out to the wing a little bit. Ball carrier, uses the ball well. Again, the conditions might play a factor here, but I think it is Sam Menegola. But I don't think we should underestimate that loss for the Cats. Similar to the Pies with Sidebottom, similar players. They do the same thing. They're smart, been around for a long time, and they kick goals. So I think Sam Menegola is going to be really important for the Cats in this one. The other one I wanted to ask you, Adam Treloar, played two games here now, averaging 32.5 disposals per game. So we talk about possession counts and what it means in the game. For shorter quarters, he's getting 32.5 touches a game, 35 last week against Hawthorn, 30 against Essendon the week earlier. Now, he's only going by 42% by foot. So that's not great, but he's a guy that works hard. 3.5 rebound 50s, 4.5 inside 50s. Really damaging player. Again, maybe the weather nullifies this a little bit. Cam Guthrie's the guy that the Cats use if they want to lock someone down. Are you, if you're going to do this, if you're the Cats, if you're going to send him to someone, is it Treloar or Pendlebury in this instance?
It is a tough one because that's the problem you have with these elite teams is the level of midfielders in there. You send one guy in there and the other guy gets a little bit loose. I think Pendlebury's going to get loose to a degree anyway. So I think I'd probably want to stop it from Treloar, who is, again, more likely to get those contested balls and then flick them out to Pendlebury. So while if you do stop Treloar, you don't stop Pendlebury 100%, but you do cut a little bit of his outside ball supply if you do that. So that's probably the way I would go. Treloar has averaging almost 5 clearances a game as well in his two games there as well. So that is something that he is doing too. And I think if you can put a limit on that or at least 50-50 some of those clearances, and then it does reduce how he brings those other guys into the game.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think as far as the selection for the Cats goes as well, I mentioned maybe a late change for the Pies. Worth looking at the Cats with Radaglia and Hawkins, the two tall forwards, and Darcy Fort. Maybe the Cats do something funny here. They've got the bolter, a real bolter in the emergencies. Francis Evans was a guy that nobody thought was going to get drafted anywhere near. He did. The Cats took him with pick 41. He only played two TAC Cup games last year before having a foot injury. So do they sneak him in? Because goals are going to come at a premium here tonight. I think for Collingwood, possession game, as we know, we speak about it a lot. They love to move the footy around, use this short kick. Handballs we've seen have come in from them the last couple of weeks in particular. They've had 132 more disposals than the Cats on the season, but the Cats have had 15 more inside 50. So that tells a fair picture. In the wet, Collingwood might have to change their game style a little bit.
Yeah, and yeah, Collingwood's going at a pretty low kick-to-handball ratio as well. Their disposals per goal is wild. It's 37 for Collingwood, 26 for Geelong. So that all ties into this narrative about Collingwood. And it's not a narrative because it's true that they do handball a lot more than kick. They overpossess the ball. Well, not overpossess, they get more possessions and they use the ball a lot more to their teammates rather than getting it in as quickly. And that is the one thing that is going to stand out here. And in that, how is that going to hold up in a wet weather environment? That is going to be something that is important. And one thing I wanted to look at, though, in this game, we talk about the midfield battle, but Gary Ablett, we've talked about him last week in the father-son thing and how impactful he was as a midfielder, but now he's playing almost exclusively as a forward. But every time he gets the ball, it seems, it's not exactly, but every time he gets the ball, something is happening. He is kicking a goal. He's setting up a goal. He is being dangerous up there. So I want to know, what's Collingwood going to do to try and stop Gary Ablett? Because you don't need to stop him getting the 40 touches or 30 touches in this day. You need to stop him having 16 impactful touches and score involvements and assists and just being that guy. Do they put Maynard on him and try and make Ablett be a little bit more accountable the other way? Do they chuck a young guy like Quainer on him and try and run off him with that sort of youthful exuberance? Like, how do they try and stop that?
I'd be worried about putting someone like Quainer on him just because Ablett's so damn smart.
Yeah, that's the reason
I said earlier that Mitch Duncan is one of the Cats' best ball users is because Ablett is the best. And you're right, he gets his 14 touches. They're almost all gold. If I'm Collingwood, I'm throwing Maynard on him because this guy's a bull. This guy is a bull, and he's been incredible this season. And Gary Ablett at this point in his career, I mean, we've seen it a little bit through his season. I would say Maynard, go to Ablett, rough him up a little bit. Really rough him up. Get into him because we know it's going to be wet. We know it's going to be contested. Get physical with Ablett and see if you can throw him off his game a little bit. Maynard, for me, is the one I'm throwing at him. We can almost guarantee now that Ablett's going to start half forward. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. I think that's the direction I'm going.
Maynard is also super tough, as you said, but he's also so damaging the other way. He is third in the AFL in metres gained. He averages 22 disposals a game off halfback. He has the sixth most amount of kicks. And we talk about this team, so many handballs. Like, this guy doesn't. He gets it and he kicks it and he gains a ton of ground and he runs. And, this is, how is Ablett, getting Ablett out the back could be damaging if Maynard turns it over. But in general, he gets the ball and he starts so much. He's going at 81% as well efficiency, so there's not that many turnovers that he's doing. In terms of intercepts versus turnovers, he's at 39 versus 21. So he's creating a lot more positivity, and that makes Ablett a little bit more accountable if that is the direction they go.
Should be a pretty damn good game. One last stat from that one. Collingwood, 19 goals they've kicked in the in five first quarters since the restart. 19 goals in five first quarters. In the other 15 quarters, they've only kicked 23. So they get their damage done early. They take a lead. The two games they've lost, they only led the Giants by 5 points at quarter time, and scores were level against the Bombers. So the Cats are in it at quarter time. What we've seen over the last 5 weeks tells you that they're going to be a red-hot chance in this game. And I read that story from the Geelong Advertiser. My guy, Josh Barnes, had those stats handy this morning in that story. But as we do every Thursday, we talk about the Thursday night game, and then we look ahead to Friday night a little bit. So Doggies and the Bombers. Bombers in red hot form. Bulldogs looking to bounce back a little bit. Last five times these teams have met, and there's always teams that have a bogey team. The Dogs have won five in a row by an average of 56.4 points per game. So they've had the Bombers measure. There's no doubt about that. The one thing I wanted to touch on before we really get into this, Joe Danaher, injured again. Looks like he pinged a calf. This was yesterday or a couple of days ago by the time you're listening to this. So it's a little bit of old news, but John Worsfold yesterday said it won't hold him back much. Come on. You've already come out and said that he's not running for 10 to 14 days. It's definitely a setback. He's under the clock now. And remember, we don't know where he's going to be playing next year. Maybe not at Essendon. So they don't have a lot to lose. I know that that's probably not the way the medical staff's looking at it, but if the Bombers are trying to win a flag, They want to get him back in there. So it's a setback. It's a big setback.
Yeah, look, it's definitely a setback. So I don't really care what Worsfold's saying. And by saying, oh, it's not going to send him back, because it obviously is, like a guy that's had so many injuries and then another one that's going to put another 2 weeks before he's running again. That's putting a bit of a problem in terms of where he sits for the rest of the season. I'm glad you mentioned the past Essendon Bulldogs matchups, because who can forget at the end of last season when the Bulldogs kicked 21 goals consecutively against Essendon. That was one of my most favorite games to watch, because I was watching it and you just couldn't believe that it was happening. He's got it's gonna stop now, and it just kept happening for like 3.5 quarters. Essendon just didn't kick a goal and the Bulldogs just kept piling them on. It was super fun, and it was super fun because it was against Essendon. But let's talk about this Essendon team. Both teams have got new players. The Bulldogs first round draft pick Cody Waitman is going to debut, and Ned Cale is going to debut for Essendon, two small forward types who, you know, all the talk about them are lighting it up in the scratch matches. Just those goal-kicking, pressure-type forward options for them. The Bulldogs are getting a lot of their recent young players in. We talked about Latham Vandermeer quite a bit. Louis Butler's played, and now Waitman, their first-round pick, is going to be coming in as well. They're going to also welcome Hayden Crozier back, but there is some concern about Connor McKenna, whether he is going to be ready to go with a hand problem.
Yeah, similar to Tom Lynch, I guess, last week with Richmond, to have the early surgery in the week and then try and get up for this game. He's had a rough run of it. We know that. But what do you know about these young dogs? I mean, we've spoke about this. They play a similar way, and everyone wants to compare it to the 2016 team. Last week, I thought that maybe the conditions got them a little bit. This is a team that we know plays really well, particularly at Marvel Stadium and in dry conditions where they can get out and run and flick the ball around. What do you know about these young players? And this Dogs team just continues to get younger.
Well, yeah, Waitman is that small forward type of player. So he's sort of going to fill that role that Sam Lloyd and Tory Dixon have filled in the past, or even back to when Luke Dalhouse was filling that role. He's not particularly tall, but he's relatively athletic. He's pretty explosive. He's a guy that you look to put that sort of tackle pressure on. He's only 177 centimetres. So obviously not a tall player, but real good sort of ground goal sense, can take a bit of a grab as well. And one thing I saw yesterday, I did tweet this out, that he is he's only 39 days younger than Bailey Smith, which is Smith again is just like established as he's not an elite player, he's not a superstar, but he's not far off it. He's getting close to being that you are the top level mid, or one level below top level midfielder, and he's only 39 days older than Cody Waitman. That's obviously nothing against Cody, who again has been impressing in the scratch matches, and he comes in just to be another forward option, because you've talked about it before, just getting some goals there. And what happened last week against Carlton is that the ball seemed to come out pretty easily from forward 50. When the Bulldogs entered, it rebounded pretty quickly out of there. I guess just trying to put a little bit of extra pressure there and adjusting to some of those slippery conditions. Again, up in the Gold Coast, the dew settles in at night. Josh Shackey he struggled in those conditions. I wouldn't be surprised if he is the one to make way for Waitman, just going a little bit smaller up forward and let Bruce be the big man up there. And that the little guys like Vandermeer and Waitman create space and create when the ball hits the deck, because grabs aren't being taken, they can be a little bit more impactful that way.
Yeah, so I want to take a look at Dylan Scheel, we know he's out. We've spoken about the suspension a lot this week. Dyson Heppel, again, been out for quite a while here. So this is critical for the Bombers in the middle. This is really bad situation for them to be in. When you look at center clearances on the season, Scheel leads the Bombers with 20. In second spot is Andrew McGrath on 6. And then you've got Zach Merritt on 6, and then Andrew Phillips, the ruckman, on 5. So this is huge for them. And if you want to go to total clearances around the ground, Dylan Scheel, 31. The second-ranked player is Andrew McGrath, again, at 19. So McGrath's been fantastic. In his fourth season, now he's played 69 games, which is nice. Disposals are from 21 up to 22, despite the shorter quarters. His tackling pressure has gone through the roof. He's never had a season where he's averaged more than 2.6 tackles per game. That's up to 6.4 this year. So he's been working hard, and he's been filling the void with Dyson Heppel out. But he's almost going to be the main man now. And this is a big ask for him against this Bulldogs midfield that we know got Lachie Hunter back last week, but they got Bont, Libba, Bailey Smith. I mean, you can rattle off the names. This is a pretty tough midfield that the Dogs have. So for the Bombers, the question is it Zach Merritt? Came back into the team. Not a huge clearance player, but can he fill the void and can he compete in the center and stop the Bulldogs from waltzing out of the middle, because we spoke about it last week, on yesterday's podcast, the mailbag, in terms of clearances. Clearances, it's not just banging the ball forward. That's a territory game, no doubt about that. But if you're able to walk the ball out of the center and have a clear line forward with the 6-6-6 setup, that's how you're going to get easy scoring opportunities. So the Bombers have to be on red alert in the midfield. And the other guy, I mean, we spoke about him. I mean, Darcy Parrish, his numbers are down right across the board. He's in his fifth season now, 81 games. And he's actually a guy around the clearances that does pretty well. He's ranked third for the team for total clearances behind only Scheel and McGrath. But he's not in the center. He's only had two center clearances for the whole season. Both of those came in that last quarter against Sydney where they won the game, and he really turned the tide. We keep speaking about him, but now that they've lost Scheel as well, there's really no excuse. He has to come in. The only other guy I can look at is Zaharakis last week. 20 disposals, 3 goals. Was fantastic. Only 1 clearance, though. So is he the guy that they say, okay, now I know you've been on the outside for a little bit here, playing forward, playing back. We need you to go into the guts, because if they can't compete, they're going to be in big trouble.
Well, let me just tell you something that is probably going to blow your mind here, Kane. You talked about Darcy Parrish, you know, with only 2 centre clearances, and he's not in the centre. That's actually not true. He attended 12 centre bounces last week, which was double the amount that Dylan Scheel did. Scheel only in the middle for 6. So the main 3 guys outside of Phillips was McGrath with 15, Parrish with 12, and Merritt with 11. Devin Smith had 9.
What was it the week before, though? Remember we were talking about it the week before?
Yes.
So it hasn't been consistent.
No. So
he's going to have to be in there.
Yeah, look, and that group that they ran with McGrath, Parrish, Merritt as the major 3, it's going to have to be that again, and Devin Smith is going to have to step up as well. And those 6 that Scheel took over, yeah, more go to Smith, more go to Parrish, more to go to Merritt. But interestingly, the Parrish was in there that much and didn't get a single one of those. And we talk about, you know, banging the ball forward. One thing went from watching, you know, the Bulldogs play, whether you win or lose the centre clearances is it's important, but again, how you use it and the way that the Bulldogs tend to use it is they tend to get it and then look. It's not get the clearance and kick it. It's get the clearance and either spread it out wide to a guy over the top on the wing, or get a handball to, you know, Bontempelli will get it, McRae will run around the back and get the handball out that way, Liberatore will get it and Bont will run through. And it's that second or third possession out of a centre situation that then results in the clearance and then will tend to be more effective rather than just pick it up and boot it. They do run that a little bit differently to some other clubs in there.
Yeah, so and they're still running with Andrew Phillips in the ruck. We saw him have a great game against Brody Grundy a couple of weeks ago. And last week, obviously, a difficult matchup with Todd Goldstein. You mentioned Devin Smith as well. He's obviously a guy that, for a large part of his career, he's been that forward, almost that permanent small forward. He's had to go into the middle. He's been okay in there. So I think the options are kind of limited with the Bombers, particularly now when they lose an A-grader like Dylan Scheel. But, I mean, that's the area for me. And again, you pointed to the numbers. I wasn't aware of that. So Parrish is in there last week. As long as they can prevent, and it is, like I sort of said, it's not about stopping the clearances altogether. And we know that winning the clearances doesn't necessarily guarantee a win. But you got to be able to compete, and you got to put some pressure on these guys, particularly Bont. I mean, if you let him stream out of the away from the center circle, it's probably going to end up badly for you.
Yeah, and that's the thing. If he gets free on the end of one of those clearances, then there is trouble. Before we do leave this, I do want to, because we haven't really mentioned him at all this season, and that's Caleb Daniel, who has been really, really impressive down back. We know that sometimes the size issue is a problem, and on the weekend he was matched up at times with Harry Mackay. He's never going to win those, but in terms of a lot of one-on-ones, he can compete pretty well. But what he does, 86% disposal efficiency. He's averaging 18 possessions a game. He's on 22 rebound 50s. He's had 6 inside 50s as well. He's the guy that the Bulldogs want to get the ball into his hands. And he is involved in so many scoring chains for this team, and he's super important. So it hasn't really happened much this season, but do you think there is a chance that perhaps Essendon looks to shut him down? Because so much, you run the risk of Johannesson running wild, but with what he's been doing, taking it out of the 50, pumping it into the 50, and getting his hand on the ball that much, do you think there's a chance they look to play a defensive role like the way that players or teams have been looking at Doherty recently?
Maybe. And maybe it's the McDonald, Tip and Woody or someone like that that goes to him and really is going to put him under pressure if he finds a footy. So it's certainly an option. I mean, we're seeing this now. We saw it with Doherty a couple of weeks ago in the game where it was Jaron Geary, I believe, that went to him in that St. Kilda Carlton game. So it's a smart play. I mean, this is, we always talk about the attack coming from the half back line, and those guys have become, you know, almost the most important player on your team, to have that guy that can read the play, use the footy well, and really attack, start the attack before the defense gets set. So yeah, I think it's definitely something you could look at. The only thing with Caleb Daniel that I would say, I mean, he hasn't got the driving kick of a player like Doherty or Nick Gaines.
He's only like hitting 30-35s. Exactly. I actually looked up his contested defense one-on-one loss percentage. It's only 33%, which, again, you think, oh, if Caleb Daniel's getting out there and he's got to get him one-on-one, he's going to lose. Then, you know, that's not necessarily the case. Like, that's 33%. That's a decent enough ratio. You want it under 30 most likely, but that's not bad for a guy whose majority of his work is coming on an offensive bent, coming out of defense. But to be able to at least hold up that way, I think is decently impressive.
There's never been a player in the history of the AFL that's wore a helmet that isn't a scrapper. So it just comes with the territory.
Shout out to Phil Narkle and the old stack hat. That's actually one of my favorite AFL pictures of all time. That footy card, and he's got the old got the old helmet on. It's a stack hat covered in St Kilda colours. It's fantastic.
Oh well, geez, I'm looking at my Twitter feed. This is it looks like you're back. So
am I? Guess, can I tweet? I guess,
yeah, it looks like it. So you can fire off all those hot takes you've had sitting there. But again, Thursday and Friday night footy, pretty good. Pretty good games to look forward to. We'll wait and see what the weather does for tonight's game. But listen, there's not too many days we're going to have here in the next month or so where there isn't footy, so I'm looking forward to that.
It is going to be good. Thank you again, Kane, for joining me here today on Locked On AFL, talking footy. We'll be back to recap Thursday's game tomorrow and then look at more action across the weekend. Don't forget, subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Spotify. And today, guys, I'm going to leave you with a shout-out to Raph Clark.